Welcome to The Offer, the no sugar added approach to the talent triangle with an unfiltered view of employers, candidates, and recruiters. I am your host, Michael Glinter.
The Offer, unfiltered.
Before we get started, just a reminder, if you need any type of services, questions, you are looking to do a sponsorship on my show, or you have needs as far as resumes or anything as far as the staffing industry, please email me at michael@michaelglinter.com. Again, that is michael@michaelglinter.com, so we can connect. You can also check me out on social media. And please, as a reminder, don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast to get weekly updates, as well as please pass along information to your friends and family. I'm excited to have my guest on my show today. Julian Roberts is 25 years in retail manufacturing experience. He brings a wealth of knowledge. He now operates an executive leadership and coaching business where he works with companies on really creating an environment that's focused on people and individuals and really trying to emphasize the need for employees to have a purpose in the workplace. So with that being said, I'd like to welcome to the show Julian.
I want to give you the chance to introduce yourself to the audience, and then I think we'll kind of go down the path of talking about companies organically growing their people and helping navigate through some of these challenges and the stresses of having, you know, more pressure piled on the people because of people being out because of COVID or positions not being filled because of COVID or whatever. But we'll get into the whole gamut of it. But why don't you just introduce yourself, kind of what you do and what brought you to doing what you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm Julian Roberts. I'm an executive and leadership coach, and I'm also a resilience trainer. I do a lot of resilience training in organizations, also an NLP certified practitioner. And my premise of what I do is I help organizations thrive through coaching and through training and help leaders unlock their potential. My background has been in the corporate world for 20 odd years, working for organizations like Heinz, Yoplait, General Mills, through to smaller companies, entrepreneurial companies, until about 3.5 years ago that I set up my own consultancy and coaching practice. And here we are today.
And interestingly enough, Julie and I have a little bit of a connection because I spent 21 years in staffing, and the bulk of my time I spent in the food and beverage industry. So companies like Heinz and General Mills were once clients of mine. So it's, we have a good synergy and certainly a good understanding. And clearly, you know, General Mills especially, I would say, has a history of building high performance work teams and high-performance work team environment. So certainly it's something that we can kind of glance at in our conversation. You know, the first question I want to ask you, you know, and just so my audience knows, Julian is currently in the UK. I am currently in the US. As many of people will agree, separate, just because we're separated by a pond, you know, both countries are I guess you could say diplomacies, but I don't really want to go there. But both countries run very similarly. You know, I would say that there's a lot of synergies behind that partnership, or what was a strong partnership. And so it would be an interesting avenue to talk with Julian Tate, because I think he'll give a little bit of a different twist to, you know, how the UK and the global environment is navigating the COVID 19 and also organizational drive and development versus, you know, people here in the US, which, you know, probably have some similarities. But my first question is really around COVID-19. You know, we're going through this pandemic. What a lot of people don't realize is every time somebody gets sick, they're absent from their employer, which puts undue stress on their employees at the company because they're not going to replace the person. They're obviously going to wait for the person to come back. As the pandemic has grown and grown, those absenteeism and the lack of bodies, I guess you could say, in these positions all over the world has caused an influx of pressure being mounted on the people that are healthy still working. How do you navigate that? Because you know that your employees are going to be stressed out. You know your employees are going to think, you know, what are they doing to fix it? When there's really nothing you can do. You can't fire somebody because they're sick. You know, how do you build an environment where you can keep people motivated to stay and fight through it, knowing hopefully that there's an end to this pandemic?
Yeah, Michael, it is a challenge, and I think a lot of organizations are faced with that. You know, people going off, workloads, unpredictability in their sectors, in their country, in their finances. I mean, it's a whole myriad of challenges out there. And I guess it goes back to, getting people to a place where, not just from a corporate perspective or an organizational perspective, but dealing with people as individuals and focusing on individuals. And I think what I've been talking to a lot of organizations about is, you know, if you want to build ultimately a resilient culture, resilient organizations, you start with those individuals and really sort of hone in on that and start to, instill, train, build resilience as an individual. And there's a number of ways you can do that. And it might not be directly answering your question about navigating it, but I believe if you can build resilience in an individual or be resilient, you can navigate and overcome pretty much anything that gets thrown at you. Because whether we're in COVID-19 or, you know, you just lost a customer or you've had a breakdown in your manufacturing, we'll always have challenges along the way. And it's all how we deal with it and how we approach that and how we respond accordingly. Because those things are outside of our control. And the only thing we can control is ourselves and how we respond. And I've been talking to a lot of companies about getting back to, I suppose you can almost get it back to a sense of purpose in your organization, you know, because when things are tough, people start to get a bit glum, get a bit down and start to almost look down and feel a bit negative. But remind your people of the vision of the company or the mission, the purpose, however you frame it, because that's something that will inspire you. That's something that was born out of inspiration, and that's something that will give you energy. And it, you know, it's just like going on a journey, isn't it? You know, if we're going from, you know, from the south of England to Scotland, and your vision, your purpose is to get to Scotland, but along the way you face, you know, rain, cold, breakdowns in a car, all sorts of things. But the only thing that'll keep you going is that vision and that purpose, which is to get to Scotland. It's a very simplistic term, but I think people need to be reminded of the company vision again and to be galvanized and to really, dwell on that again, because that's where the source of energy is to sort of lift your gaze a bit beyond the now and to see where we're going as a business. Because
I want to stop you for a second, because I've been eager to go back to something you said. Explain to my audience, what do you mean by resilience?
Resilience is the capacity to, or the human capacity to overcome challenges or adversity, however you term it. And for me, resilience is a skill. You don't just meet people who are more resilient. It's because they've learned the skill of resilience and had the opportunity to stretch that skill muscle in situations. Because we all have a choice, whatever we get faced with in life. We have a choice to accept it, reject it, or do something about it. And the resilience is having that capacity to overcome.
So what you're saying is that we need to be prepared for the fact that there are going to be speed bumps. And rather than get frustrated when those speed bumps occur, take the position that we know that they're going to be there, and how we handle it is going to determine how it impacts us.
Yes.
Excellent. Negativity is oftentimes a killer of efficiencies in an organization. And as you know, with any environment, it could also breed a lot of people not to be resilient or not to want to take on those challenges or not to be able to overcome those issues. How do you prevent negativity from creeping up into an organization where it takes over the way we think?
Yeah, I think negativity, and I guess in some ways it will always be there, and we will also always have those negative thoughts. And I think the key thing is not always to tell somebody or stop being so negative, because that's a negative in itself and not very helpful, is to create a sense of dialogue within your organization, within your teams. And for me, again, it goes back to, instead of getting them to focus on why they're negative, is to set their antennae again back onto the positive. And it's just what I just previously said, is getting back to, you know, whether the purpose of a team or the purpose of their role, and start to look for that and get them to focus on purpose. You know, we have a thing in our brain called a reticular activating system. It's a filtering part of our brain that's because we get so much sensory overload that comes into our brains, your brain chooses to filter, and it filters according to what we set it. So if we set it to a positive and see the good in things, we will start to see opportunities, we start to see ways forward, we start to see the creativity and the opportunities that we can build and get around a problem. But if we set it to a negative, then we will see the problem, ways we can't do it, all the issues. And so what you're trying to do is get people to set it to more positive. And one way of doing that is to get back to what is your purpose, what is your mission, you know, build relationships within the organizations, get people alongside each other, to sort of support each other and help each other, because there's always moments when we're all feeling a little bit down or a little bit more negative, but you're allowing somebody who's a bit more purposeful, it can inspire you then to get back to actually out your funk a little bit and start thinking, actually, I need to think about that and start to get a bit more purposeful. So that's one of the ways I would always encourage organizations, and not beating the same drum, but that purpose thing is really important, and it sets your brain and your whole psychology in a better way that will endeavor you to see the positive and be more creative of navigating that and start to dispel those negativities, because they won't be even entering it because you're focusing so much on the positive.
Do you think it's more important for an organization to have a general purpose at the top, or do you think that purpose needs to really be started or driven or focal pointed at the departmental divisional levels, or even in the location of where the business is? Because, you know, every company has a vision, right? I mean, vision, mission, whatever you want to call them. There's a lot of different terminologies for them. But that's at the top, right?
Yeah.
But then as you trickle down into the operations, that vision and the purpose at the corporate office tends to disappear. So I guess my question to you is, you know, do you feel like how do you disseminate, how do you make sure that there's an alignment there, and how important do you think is the frontline management over the corporate management?
I think it's important to have both the top line and the, I suppose, the team or the business unit, however you have it in an organization. The important thing, the global vision is what that will set where you're going as a ship sent to sail to America or whatever. That's your big corporate vision. We're off to America. And that needs to be communicated. That needs to be translated in a way that people can buy into, and it makes sense for them by each of those teams. And it needs to be, you know, future focused, got to be positive, and it's got to make sense. And everybody's got to buy into it, because that will drive culture, that will drive the sense of pace, and all the activities that flow out of that in terms of sort of objectives and strategies and all the way tactics, all the way down to the bottom. In terms of within a team, within that context, you would align your, you may have a, I work for an organization where we had a customer team vision. I was managing a customer in the UK. Largest retailer in the UK, and I had a team vision. But that in itself was aligned to our overall company vision, but it was just made it more specific. So then the people in my team, a team of sort of 15 or so, could feel a sense of buying into it and a sense of responsibility and accountability, because A, they built and they were part of that development of that vision. That's the other key thing, is within a team, you get people to, you go away and do it on a away day and you build that vision together and you start to create that and a sense of ownership. And so that was slightly, it was a building block to the overall, but it actually was made very specific to the team and that we could all buy into. And it felt that as a team, we were then, our purpose is to do this. And we knew that. And by doing that, it meant the overall vision of the company. So it is both. But the key thing is getting other team members to buy into it by their contribution, by them adding value of the sort of ideas, their creativity, and they rather than being thrust upon them, that should have been part of it. And that to me is the key bit with people, is that collaboration and that sense of, you know, working as a team. Because, you know, I've been a team leader and a director, you know, I don't know all the answers. And my having a team is why I have a team, is because collectively we have a better chance than me doing all the answers on my own. So that's how it works. And that's how I used to operate and say, look, I've got some ideas, but you've got some even better ideas. And by coming together, we can spark a few different ideas and create a vision that we're, that's even better than it was in isolation of me trying to create it.
And I can feel the sense of General Mills bleeding out of me right now. Because for people that don't know, General Mills, so it's an interesting organization. I've seen positives and negatives behind the organization. I think that they have done a great job in team leadership and participation activities, getting people involved in the day-to-day success of the operation and really creating ownership. I think the downside is that I think they may have gone too far, whereas people don't understand how the organizational management structure is defined. And I've run into many of people that, you know, by definition may be managers, but are called like, you know, team leaders or whatever. And people don't understand what the differences are. But at the end of the day, one of the things that General Mills has been very famous for is creating that, you know, high performance team-based work environment. And actually, you'll be interested to hear this. I am talking to the creator of HPWS. There's a couple of people here in the US that drove the guidance and thought process behind high performance work systems. And she reached out to me and said, listen, you keep saying on your show, high performance work teams, blah, blah, blah. Do you even know what you're talking about? Because I oftentimes find that many people use it as just a general term, but don't understand the true meaning. And I emailed her back and says, well, I mean, is there really a definition? She said, I'm part of the people that created it. I'm like, oh, well, I guess there is somewhat of a definition. So I'm excited because I'm going to have her on my show. She's going to come forward and kind of talk about kind of what the premises was, how it started, and really the definition of it. But one of the things, so kind of a segue, we talked a little bit about navigating resilience, navigating issues within the workplace, you know, that type of stuff. What is your thought process behind developing people internally? Because I feel like, and I don't know if it's like this here, like it in the UK is there in the US, but in the US, I don't feel like companies do anywhere near enough to develop organically. I think we oftentimes find that companies will you know, immediately go and say, let's go external, find somebody, you know, without really thinking long-term of how they are not or can be developing people within the internal workforce. What do you think that companies could do differently to really drive that organic growth, other than the resilience piece and other than having them be ingrained in the success of the organization? But what can corporate management, what can leaders do differently to do more to organically grow their people versus just going outside and saying, okay, I'll just find somebody somewhere?
Yeah, no, and I've been part of organizations, you know, like General Mills, where you get a lot of investments, and unfortunately has been focused very much on certain talent and certain talent sort of boxes you get put into, and therefore you get a sense of more support. And you know, I've had executive coaching along the way, which has really helped propel my career, which is brilliant. And you know, I think it's, you know, and obviously I now deal with a lot of learning development managers and HR directors in terms of trying to help develop their people through various means. And I think there'll always be a need to go outside, and it's not just about, oh, we haven't got the talent internally. And I know this, you know, this wonderful sort of view of trying to have everything grow internally and from your own people, because that's just not real. And also it's helpful to have people outside from different industries, different companies, different cultures, A, to sort of bring some fresh ideas and different perspectives. So I'm a believer sometimes going outside is really helpful. But I think you should certainly have a plan, and it's not just the responsibility sits with HR, a plan as a team leader of a business, of a unit, of how am I going to develop my people? How am I going to help grow them? You know, my responsibility as a leader is to lead them, you know, to set sail and to be that leader who is willing to step in the arena, willing to be vulnerable, willing to lead the way in how I communicate, how I behave, all those sort of things. But also it's my responsibility to help these guys grow and develop the best I can. If I want somebody to go from level three to level four, you know, how can I help them? But there is still the responsibility with each individual. We're all always accountable for our own destiny, our own career. But as a leader, you know, I'm there to, would be there to help serve and help develop them. You know, what are their aspirations? What do they want to be in 5 years' time? How can I help facilitate that? Yes, it may mean they may leave at some point, but along the way, I want to get a load of great inspiration from them, a great energy from them, and great pieces of work from them because I'm investing in them. And I think it's more of a culture of that willingness to invest in somebody, but also willingness to let them have a go at something. Because I think companies get so boxed into, you're in marketing, therefore you've got to keep going through the marketing route. Well, actually, why don't you jump into sales? That'll give you some different exposure, working with customers, working the sales team, and giving people having to have a go at something and let them learn in that way. Obviously, support them, provide all the stuff they need. But I think companies need to get a little bit more risky of how they develop people, because if they don't do that, people will start to leave and go elsewhere for that inspiration, that development, and just general challenge. You know, people want to be, it's not just about the money, it's not just about the career development, people just want to be stimulated in what they do. And so by moving around in different roles and different functions provides that. So I think we need to be a bit more risky in how we develop people and not so caught up on a particular talent path or talent model in an organization.
I love what you just said. Oh, several things that you just said, I should say. But I love the fact that you said companies need to be more risky. Reward, the bigger the risk, the bigger the rewards. And sometimes if you take a risk and it doesn't work, you learn from it. But if you never actually go beyond just simple and safe, how are you going to grow as an organization? And so I love the fact that you're highlighting the fact that one of the biggest issues for companies is they need to take bigger risks, because they do. If they don't, then you're always going to be stuck as just a company with no vision or plan. The other thing that I like about what you said, and I say this a lot of times to applicants, and even now more to people that are struggling to pivot because the industry that they're in is not doing well, is you've got to think of moving up the ladder as more of a stepladder than just a ladder. And that means that to grow faster, higher, to grow higher, you've got to be able to both learn horizontally, but also vertically. And if you don't, then you're going to be pigeonholed long-term in what you can and cannot do. And so I love it when a candidate or an employee or whatever, you know, contacts me and says, you know, I want to grow. And so my next step in my career progression would be X. Well, by whose standards? How do you not know that there may be another step in that career progression that you're not even considering? Like, what about, you know, if you develop more in area X, do you think you can get beyond the next step? And then the other thing I tell people all the time, which I'm sure you will concur, is you can't think short term. If you want to be a CEO one day, is it a straight up shot? Most time, no.
No, not at all.
But especially the youth of today, there's this naive conception out there that to get to the top, you just have to keep growing, 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 growing. Well, there's more to it than growing.
It's agility. Do you know what? I love people who have the ability to be agile in what they do and transfer their skills in different departments, different sectors, because actually that's more interesting to me. Because if you're agile in that sense, and therefore you're training yourself to be quite agile and quite responsive, therefore it goes back to resilience again. Therefore it goes back to those people who can actually overcome challenges, because A, they'll pull on experiences they've had before in a broader context and a deeper perspective, but also they have to have that nous about them because they can be agile. And that's what I always used to look for when I was recruiting. I used to love agility, and I used to quite like people from slightly different backgrounds who are trying to either get more exposure in something to broaden out their career for something bigger as they go up, because the bigger the base you build, the stronger it'd be as you go up. And I think, you know, gone are the days where you just, you know, you kind of sell, you know, you're a manager, sales manager, sales director, CEO. It just doesn't work that way. You know, there's things like going to different countries, different sectors, you know, different departments within your organizations. And I think the more you get exposed to, and certainly as a, if you're heading towards a CEO MD role, the more exposure you've had to a business from every capacity, from operations through to sales and marketing, the more effective and understanding you will be as a CEO as well. So it's really important, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. With regards to long-term strategies, and this is another one, I think.
Are we doing long-term now, Ree? Long-term?
No, you're funny. Well, listen, let's be honest. For every person that thinks long-term, there's 10 people that think short-term. I've been staffing for 21 years, and it's the most common issue that I think most individuals have in their own personal development and growth. They think, what's my next step? But they don't think what the steps they're getting to, like what they're trying to accomplish long-term. And that really is what determines your next step. It's not what people will tell you what your next step is. It's really, how do you get to get your long-term game? And, you know, when I interview people, the first thing I always ask people, and even now when I do resumes, because I do resume writing and branding now, the first thing I always ask them is, what's your end game? Like, sometimes they'll be like, what? But at the end of the day, what's your end game? What do you want? Like, do you want to run a company? Are you just passionate of being HR? Like, what's your end game? What do you want to do long term? And it's a baffling question to many people because no one's really ever asked them that. But I'll tell you, it's what defines your path.
Yeah.
So from a long-term perspective, right, one of the biggest pushbacks that I get from millennials and Gen Zers, the youth of America, is that, you know, there's a need, because the baby boomer population was so big, you know, there's going to be a tremendous need for them to be able to step up. And why should they have to take a traditional path? Why can't they skip over levels? Meaning, I've had managers call me up and say, I want to be a director or VP now. I don't want to be a manager anymore. I says, well, that's fine. But I mean, you have to grow into that type of a role. But they have this expectation that, you know, why do I have to, you know, wait long to get there? Like, how can I just get there instantaneously? How do you convince people Or what do you say to people that want to just flip the switch, that they don't want to put the time in to develop and get to where they really need to be? They just want to be. And how do you convince them that it's not that easy?
Well, there's two things on that. The first thing, going back to when I was a director myself and had individuals come to me and say, I want to be either do what I do or beyond, which is great. And I quite like those conversations when you're trying to develop people who've got aspiration about something. And rather than, because often we get somebody who says, I want to be a CEO, and we all bring a judgment, don't we? I think,
right,
whether they can be a CEO or not. And so I often, instead of bringing the judgment or like certainly expressing that judgment, would always say to them, okay, so you want to be a CEO, and whoever this might be, whether the 25, 30, whatever it is, okay, what do you need to do to be a CEO? So I just throw it back to them and get them to think about what they need to do, you know, what things need to happen to that, for that to sort of be facilitated. And then they would start to think about whether role, experience, whatever it may be. And then we'd have a very fruitful conversation. And also a realization as well, whether they felt they were just saying it because that's what people say to be ambitious, or they realize actually it's not as hard and not as easy as I thought, but I've got a plan now. And they've gone away, and instead of being 3 years in their head or whatever, it's more like 5-6 years, whatever. So I've asked them the question, get them to reflect and get them to the place of that. And that then makes them a bit more energized. And I've not told them yes or no, or this is what you need to do, and I might add some advice to it and help them and guide them. So I've always found that really helpful. Latterly, when I've had conversations with people from my being a coach, I've always said to people, don't get so caught up on title, position, and everything else, because unfortunately, it's not always so exciting at those levels anyway. You might have more money, you might have more responsibility, a better car, blah, 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 and be working longer hours and everything else. Get more aware of what's going to really resonate with you. What is your personal purpose, your mission? Again, sorry for repeating myself, but it just goes back to this, really. What's going to fulfill you? Because actually being a CEO of a company might not fulfill you. You might think that's what you need to do, to be ambitious. It may have been told from a parent that that's the way you'd be successful. Your dad did that, or whatever it may be. But actually, what's going to fulfill you? And actually, what may be fulfilling you is to have your own business. It might be to be this, whatever it may be. And get more interested in that and put more energy into that, as opposed to thinking about the career. So that's how I've tend to focus it on. And a lot of it is to get people to reflect on it and think about it, and rather than just telling them yay or nay, because that's not very helpful in that context.
I love the fact that you touch on, don't focus on just the job title, because you and I both know, well, coming from General Mills, you really know, job titles don't mean diddly squat. I mean, and listen, General Mills is a great company. I know I'm going to get an email from somebody from General Mills saying, listen, like, no, they're a great company. But it's true. We all know it's true. People from General Mills will tell you that they have very funky job titles, but that you oftentimes can't figure out what exactly do they do and what their level of responsibility. And it's okay, but it's understanding, you know, how to define that. But they're the epitome of, you can't go off of a job title, because I talk to people at General Mills, and when I look at their resume, I'm thinking, oh, you know, they're a frontline supervisor. And then when I'm on the phone with them, they have several departments, they manage multiple P&Ls. So you have to know the role as it's defined, but then also know, you know, what's going to excite you and impassion you as far as your day to day. And I think you touch on that. You know, you're right. People need to go with what's going to get them excited to go to work, not necessarily what people have told them is their next step. And I think that's where a lot of people miss out, is they focus so much on the next step that people tell them they need to do versus what's going to impassion them long-term. You know, I feel like this topic of, you know, how people grow and navigate through their career is oftentimes driven by the people that we work for, not, you know, ourselves. And I tell people all the time, you know, one of my favorite things to do with applicants and clients is telling them to open up an Excel spreadsheet. And on one side, in one column, put all the things you love about every single one of your jobs. And on the other side, write down all the things you hate about every single one of your jobs. Take the things that you love and start putting those words into like Indeed or LinkedIn as job searches to see what kind of jobs come up. Because you'd be surprised. You'll start reading jobs and say, whoa, I never thought about this type of work. Or you'll start seeing job titles that are completely different than what you've been searching on and realize, huh, maybe I'm looking for the wrong gig, or maybe the gigs that I've been focused on are not the right focus, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm a classic example of this, of, you know, come out of university and then you get onto the track of the corporate career, got a job with Heinz, did well there, jumped and then got a bigger job, and eventually got into Yoplait General Mills as a commercial director. Bingo, you know, done the career ladder and very focused at the time on, you know, the next step and the more money and the title and all that sort of stuff. And it wasn't only till about 3 or 4 years ago then I started to reflect on my career. Should have done it earlier, but hey, that's how it was. And I started to realize, actually, as much as I was in the sales environments and was successful, was good at it, very good at strategy, very good at leading people, the biggest thing I started to realize, I loved working with individuals in my team, and I loved coaching them. I loved unlocking their potential. And that's what got more excited than winning a client or winning a listing in a retailer of a new product launch. That made me think, actually, that's what I like. And that was the push that got me into the world of coaching. Then I left corporate world, set my own company up and trained to be a coach. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm actually doing now unlocking people's potential, which is what my mission is. Personally, is more exciting, more energizing than I've ever done before, and so now I'm hitting something. And actually, that's what I love. Yes, I'm my own boss. I could call myself a CEO now, but I don't get caught up in that. And so, it's interesting how I was just on that track of, you know, doing well in my career and just moving up the ladder, and then I realized actually, I'm more into the world of coaching and actually more aligned to the world of HR. And learning and development, which I was never even in at all within my corporate career. And I remember a lady actually from General Mills, a lady called Christina Morton, and she's still at General Mills in the US. Oh, I think she might be in France. I can't remember where she is now, but she's a VP of HR. And I remember her talking to me and said, I came up with this sort of whole sort of process with my team, how to develop them and everything else, this sort of competency-based thing. That, and she went, oh, you should be in HR with that sort of stuff. And it's interesting. I've a few years later thought about that when I started to go on the career of becoming a coach and get involved with L&D and everything else. So interesting times for it all, isn't it?
Absolutely. Julian, I think we could go on forever, which is always a good thing. But obviously, as you know, in the podcast world, you have the attention span of people for only about 30 or 40 minutes, and then they kind of die off. Hopefully, they're still listening. I know my audience tends to be somewhat resilient to boredom. You like that?
I love that.
Yes, resilience. I love it. You know, it's funny. You know, over the last 10 months, I've talked to a lot of people, and I've heard a lot of terminology. Heard a lot of reference to a lot of different things. But I'll tell you, it's interesting how even every conversation I have, a new word, a new thought process, a new mindset of how one thinks of management leadership comes out. And it's interesting because I've never once, you know, heard someone use the term resilience. And it's kind of sad, I guess, kind of in a way. But it's interesting because you're phrasing it to a point a little bit differently than what other people have phrased it, but in a good way. And I think it just expands the definition and the mindset of what we're thinking.
I really appreciate your time. If people want to, now you do all your, most of your work is in the UK. You don't do a lot of work in the US, or do you?
Online I will, but yes, predominantly is the UK, yeah.
Okay, but if a US company wants to talk with you, maybe get a different strategy, maybe they think that, you know, the UK does it better, and I'm not saying that they don't, what's the best way? I'm going to put your LinkedIn in my podcast notes, but do you want me to put your email? You know, what's the best way to navigate that?
Yeah, LinkedIn is pretty good. Julian Roberts on LinkedIn. My email is julian@julianrobertsconsulting.com. And my website is julianrobertsconsulting.com as well. So either of those ways, you can get hold of me.
Excellent. Listen, my friend, I look forward to the next time we chat.
No, thank you, Michael. I've loved being on your show. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Please remember to subscribe to my podcast. Also, please, please feel free to share, like, send, tag your friends. Let them have the opportunity to listen and understand and get a better viewpoint from the people that we talk to. Also, please don't forget, if you have any questions, you can email me at any time. And I hope you guys had a great day.